inspection of Miss Hartley's body, Vita told her. And do they know how she died?
Not yet.
Poisoning? What makes you think that? She'd likely had some of the shellfish she often asked for dinner in her room. The housekeeper was agitated, which Vita thought only natural. I'm sorry, but the doctors do not know. They could not tell. That is one of several possibilities that were mentioned. I expect they will have to call the police or the coroner. Mrs. Parks was turning a handkerchief over in her hands. She seemed unable to take her eyes from the door of the governess's room. Her face was blotched and puffy. I must make arrangements for her to be laid out. The funeral. Her family? Vita suggested. She has none. She's an orphan and an only child. Alone in the world, she always said. Vita had no answer to this, nor did she quite know what the procedure ought to be in a great house when a member of staff suddenly died. She was at a loss. Oh dear, and the children, the housekeeper suddenly said. Nobody has told them. They were fond of her. I must speak to their mother immediately. Stimulated to action by the thought, she hurried away. Chapter 30. Vita took her notes to the library as a place that offered a little seclusion, and began to rewrite them at her usual little table. She had not been there long before Dr. Zecker came in. He did not sit, but stood awkwardly some distance from where she was writing. Thank you for writing the notes, he said. I was glad to be of help. Miss Carew, did you observe anything unusual in the room of the unfortunate governess? I ask this because I am a foreigner, and you are more familiar with the rooms of an English family and their servants. I saw only an extremely bare room, nothing unusual, I don't think. It was unusually bare, that is true. I have seen more possessions in a nun's cell than Miss Hartley seemed to own. There were a number of books. No cosmetics? No ladies' things? Perhaps they were in the trunk or a drawer. I looked only briefly, but there was no sign. It was an austere room, I agree, but perhaps she was that sort of person. No pictures, no flowers in vases, not even the smallest amount of jewellery. She wore earrings. One single pair. She had no others, and no finery. No shawls, scarves, or pretty hats. She had nothing. Almost nothing. Is this usual? In a great house like this, a member of the household lives as poorly as that. She cannot even afford a brooch or a vase for a few flowers. I am shocked by this, Miss Carew, truly. He looked over his shoulder. I do not want to be seen talking to you. It would suggest a conspiracy to Dr. Mills, and the German ladies would not approve, even if it is in the nature of a professional discussion. I will go now. Please, when you have written out your fair copy, make sure that nobody, not Dr. Mills or anyone else, is given both copies of your notes. Keep one yourself. A professional discussion, he had called it. Vita, though not entirely sure what he had meant, felt quietly pleased. As she wrote, she wondered about what he had said. Miss Hartley's room was certainly bare. She wondered whether there was anyone she could ask about this. At this moment, little William Pemberton came into the library. Hello, he said. Are you doing your lessons here? I do mine in the schoolroom upstairs. That is a lot of writing. The boy was glancing at the sheets of paper Vita had on the table before her. He looked at her with sympathy. I had to write 2 pages once. It took all morning on Wednesday and half of Thursday morning too. Vita quickly piled the pages together, alarmed at the thought that little William might be able to read the contents. Mama would like to see you in her sitting room, William added. I will show you the way. Lady Felicity ran her hand over her eyes and motioned for Vita to sit in the chair beside her. I wanted to thank you, Vita, for your assistance during these terrible events. Are the German guests leaving? Vita asked. The window overlooked the drive, and they could see 3 carriages now, all having trunks and hat boxes loaded onto them. Felicity Pemberton sighed. All but Carlotta and her aunts. She is not well enough to travel yet, so they will stay with her a little longer. They have sent for a German cook from London to prepare their meals while they are here. I have had to banish Monsieur Picard from his own kitchen. He is outraged. The staff are up in arms. Carlotta is much stronger this morning, Vita said, hoping to change the subject to something more cheering. Yes, Mills said she was a little better. That is one mercy. I believe you went with the doctors to Miss Hartley's room, Vita. Yes, they asked for a translator, and I took notes for them as they carried out the examination. Did they come to a conclusion? Not yet. They did not find any obvious cause of death. She did not appear to have suffered an apoplexy or fit of any kind, but there can be no certainty at this stage. It could be poisoning, then? They have not come to a conclusion yet. She was not at the dinner, so... She often took food from the kitchens and carried it to her rooms. She could easily have done so last night. There were no signs that suggested that. No plates or cutlery. The doctors were struck, in general, by how bare the room was. She seemed to have lived a very austere life. Lady Pemberton looked puzzled. Austere? Her rooms were comfortable, surely. My children are often there with her. They have never said anything. She never asked for anything that I know of. Vita did not want to add to her hostess's anguish, saying only, she seemed to have few personal possessions, no little valuables, no jewellery or ornaments. She had one or two cameo brooches. I remember seeing them, and some rather pretty amber earrings. There was nothing like that in her room. Lady Pemberton seemed to dismiss that train of thought. Vita, you must be exhausted. Cook will send some breakfast up to the yellow room, and perhaps you can get a little rest. What will you tell the children? Perhaps it is not my concern, but William knows something is amiss. His father and I have decided to tell both children when they come back from their ride. We shall say that Miss Hartley has very sadly died, but no more. We will not offer any explanation. I have already forbidden the staff from speculating about the matter. Above all, they must not do so in front of the children. William and Mary Ann must have been fond of her, Vita said. Lady Pemberton paused briefly, frowning, but then said, they have known her all their lives. They have probably eaten more meals with Miss Hartley than they have with their father and I. She broke off, looking away briefly, but when she resumed, her manner was businesslike again. Now I must occupy myself with the remaining guests and Alexander. The dear boy is beside himself with anxiety. He has not slept and refuses to eat. Carlotta will not see him. Or perhaps it is her aunts who do not allow him into her room. I don't know. Vita made to leave, but Lady Pemberton took her sleeve, speaking urgently. Vita, does either of the doctors speak of involving the police? The police? They have not said. If they do, I would be most grateful if you could... You see, one would want to avoid any damage to the reputation of the family of Pemberton. It would be disastrous, and surely there is nothing to be gained. The police have not been mentioned so far, Vita told her. I shall speak to Mills, of course. He is always very obliging. But the German doctor, who knows what ideas he may have? You will let me know if you hear any mention of the police, Vita. Certainly, Vita said, but left feeling uncomfortable with her own promise. Chapter 31. Vita met Swain in the corridor as she left Lady Pemberton. The butler looked as elegant as usual, but there were dark shadows under his eyes. If you would care for some breakfast, miss. Will I send a maid to the yellow room with a tray? Thank you. Perhaps some tea, Vita said gratefully. She made her way up the staircase where, in the painting, the white monkey still howled silently and the cockerel's eyes still rolled in its severed head. The yellow room was no warmer or more welcoming, but tea and toast soon arrived on a tray. Did she imagine it, or were the servants being particularly kind to her this morning? She took a little tea and was almost immediately overcome with exhaustion, falling onto the huge bed and sleeping so soundly that when she awoke, it took several minutes to remember where she was, and then with a shudder recall the drama of the long day and night before. It was nearly noon. A soft rain was falling outside. Somewhere nearby, a song thrush sang. Vita felt a sudden longing for fresh air, but first a wash and a change of clothes. She had attended the sick all night and then fallen asleep in Miss Pushkin's lovely blue evening gown. What a shame, Vita thought, looking in the mirror, that even if it could be properly cleaned, she would never be able to wear it again without instantly being reminded of the sights, sounds, and smells of its first outing. At the washstand, as she washed her face and hands and brushed her hair, Vita became aware of voices. The sounds were coming from an odd direction. Pulling on her day dress, she walked across to the fireplaces on the opposite wall. The noise was louder near the blocked-off fireplace. Leaning in, Vita could see a sacking bundle had been used to block the chimney's draft. She pulled, and it slumped into the empty fireplace, followed by a cloudy gust of dust and soot. The voices were clearer. The first was the housekeeper. "Nettie, what will you tell them if they ask?" A wordless sound came in reply, something like a sob or a gasp. "Tell me what you said before, girl. I won't be annoyed." "Miss Hartley went to her rooms." "When? When? The time is important, girl. When did she go?"
After the music started."
"Not after. When? When the music started." The younger voice was high-pitched with fear.
"I might get it wrong, Mrs. Parks. I might say the wrong thing."
"You saw Miss Hartley go to her rooms when the music started. You saw nothing and heard nothing else."
"But Miss Parks, I did. I heard noises, that's why I rang."
"You thought you did, Nettie, but you were wrong. There were no noises."
"But..."
"There were no noises. No noises, understood? There could be trouble, Nettie, if you get this wrong."
"Yes, Mrs. Parks."
"You're sure now?"
"Yes, Mrs. Parks."
"Now dry your eyes. It's not so difficult, is it?"
"No, Mrs. Parks."
The girl sounded terrified.
When, downstairs, one of the maids brought her raincoat, Vita asked if there was a younger maid called Nettie.
"Yes, Miss, Nettie Harris. She helps in the nursery," she replied.
"I'd like a breath of air in the garden. Which is the nearest door?"
"The quickest way is along here, if you don't mind using the servants' corridor," said the maid. "Shall I show you?"
"No, thank you. I can see the way," Vita told her, and made her way along the long underground passageway to the small back door. On this side of the house, there were formal gardens with sculpted yews and gravel paths. Vita followed the path, which curved between hedges to an elaborately wrought high gate. She would have loved to stroll over the park and up as far as the folly, but the rain was already coming through her coat onto her shoulders, so she turned back, following another path, into the woodland garden, surrounding what she soon realized was an orangery. There was nobody around, so she sat on a stone bench under the arched porch to take cover from the rain, listening to a song thrush in a tall beech and breathing with pleasure the rain-scented air.
Chapter 32. A figure, a man in a raincoat,
wearing a large Homburg hat and carrying an umbrella, came along the path towards her. She could not see who it was and wondered whether she should identify herself, but this proved unnecessary as he made straight for her, bowing as he reached the bench. "Mademoiselle," he said, "I wonder if I may trouble you for a moment of your time." Vita did not object. The man stepped under the portico, out of the rain, folded his umbrella and removed his hat. "I am Emile Picard," he said. "I am the chef here at Pemberton Hall." Vita hardly knew what to say. Here was someone else whose night had been a catastrophe. She held out her hand to the chef, and he, surprised, took it gratefully and shook it. "My name is Vita Carew. I'm a guest. I came with my aunt, Mrs. Brocklehurst." "And you made the translation for the doctors during the night, I heard." "I did." "You also helped them when they found poor Miss Hartley this morning." "Yes, sadly." The chef stood holding his hat in both hands. He looked down and turned it slowly, seeming to search for the words he needed. "Miss Carew, I did not cause the poisoning last night. No food that was unfit came from my kitchen. I am certain of it." "Why do you tell me this?" Vita asked him. The chef continued to rotate his hat. He did not look up, but even the top of his bowed head communicated misery. "Nobody has spoken to me. Nobody has asked my opinion. You, at least, as a guest, someone who is an outsider, might listen to what I say. The doctors trust you, they might listen." "I have no special influence as far as the doctors are concerned. It may be the police you need to speak to." "Ah, the police," he exclaimed in despairing tones. "It has come to this, defending my kitchen to the police. I am sure if you just tell them what happened." But the chef was now trembling so much that he dropped his hat and it fell among the dried leaves on the tiled floor. "Mademoiselle," he said, "do you imagine that the word of a chef will carry any weight against that of the noble ladies and gentlemen who were taken ill last night? It will make no difference what I say. I am the one who will be blamed. It seems there is nothing I can do to defend myself and my kitchen. The shellfish was good. It was fresh. It was well stored. There was nothing wrong with it. Do you think I could grow up in Brittany, near the sea, and work as a chef all my life, without knowing good seafood when I see it? It was superb. The shellfish we served last night. The best. The highest quality. I tasted it myself. I examined everything. It did not cause the sickness." "Then you must simply tell them." He picked the hat off the ground and began brushing leaves from its soft pile. His hair and moustache were white, and he had the cleanest and most perfectly manicured fingernails Vita had ever noticed. "Will you speak for me, mademoiselle? You know French, I think."
"But, Monsieur Picard, your English is perfect."
"Please. I have no one else to ask. I may not know the exact English words I need. I stand to lose." He made an open-handed gesture of despair. "Everything." The chef looked directly up at her for the first time. His eyes were a striking blue and glistening with tears. "Of course," she said. "I will do what little I can." The chef replaced his hat and stood to attention. "I am most grateful to you, Mademoiselle Carew, and now I will leave you in peace to your contemplations."
"Before you go, Monsieur Picard," Vita said, remembering, "yesterday I saw Miss Hartley enter a room in the basement. It said chef on the door."
Picard looked up sharply. "Yes, she had taken to visiting my room. She was there yesterday. She took my reading glasses and left a letter," he said. Vita looked at the chef steadily. "She took your reading glasses?" "She was in the habit of taking small things. Not just from me, but from others too. Lately she had removed several small items of mine."
"Why did she do that?"
A form of madness, I think. Perhaps she needed money, but I think it was only a sort of habit. Also, she wanted a reason to speak to me. If she took something, she could return it. It would be an excuse to start a conversation.
Was she so lonely that she had to do that?
Miss Carew, you are young. Too young to understand, I imagine. Miss Hartley had deceived herself into believing I favoured her company. It was not so. I once spoke with her, but briefly, about opera. I know a little of the opera. I am fond of its music. In Paris, I visited the opera and saw some of the great stars.
The chef smiled wryly as he remembered happier times.
I mentioned this. It was one single conversation, but it was enough to make Miss Hartley believe we had enough in common to... He struggled for words.
Vita waited, shivering a little, and pulling her coat around her for warmth.
To become close friends. She began to visit my room, come into the kitchens, write me notes. She had misunderstood. I wanted no such thing. I did not encourage her. She began to write the most exaggerated letters several times a day. I have a large collection. Even the most blunt repudiation had no effect. I begged her to stop, but anything I said or did was interpreted as encouragement. The chef shook his head.
Does her letter help to explain what happened?
You can see for yourself, Miss Carew, he said, and handed Vita a small envelope he took from his pocket. The rain had made it damp. Vita read,
My dear Emile, I beg you to allow me one last note. I hope you enjoy Alexander's performance tonight. It will be wonderful, I know. I long to hear it myself, but I shall not. I am unwell, and my presence is unwanted. Unwanted. The word attaches itself to me like a leech. Do not concern yourself, my dear Emile. I shall trouble you no longer. I have a strong sleeping draught. It will grant me the peace I so often lack, and help to put behind me the agonizing series of snubs and slights that are my daily reward for 15 years of service to this family. Your most sincere friend, Ada Hartley.
Did you read this as a permanent farewell, Monsieur Picard? Vita asked.
Permanent? No. I read it as her reason for missing the concert. Her health has been poor. She takes medicine, a lot of medicine for pain.
This is the sleeping draught she refers to?
Indeed, that is my understanding of it. Reading it now, with the benefit of hindsight, it sounds very much like the kind of note someone might write if they intended to take their own life, Vita said.
Do you think she killed herself?
I do not, said the chef. She was a religious woman. She would consider that a sin.
Chapter 33. In the parlour a little later, Tante Gabriella sat with her feet on a low stool, listening and taking in the view as Adelina played the piano.
You think us too light-hearted, Vita, the larger aunt said, pouring her a cup of tea. It would be terribly wrong to play music if it were not for the fact that our darling girl is so much better this morning. She has taken a little breakfast and is sitting up in bed. Of course, she is not fully recovered. That may take a good while yet. She has such a naturally delicate constitution. But her colour is good and she is talking to us. Dr. Zecker believes the danger is past. So we celebrate with a little music.
Adelina was a good pianist, filling the room with what seemed to be a jolly polka. She was enjoying herself at the keyboard, playing energetically with playful flourishes of her hands.
We shall probably be leaving today, Gabriella went on. Dr. Zecker will soon decide whether our dear Lottie is well enough to travel. If she is, we will go to our friends in London for a few days' convalescence
before we travel back to Germany.
And has Lottie spoken to anyone outside the family?
Vita worded her question tactfully. Gabriella shook her head. She is with Dr. Zecker at the moment. She has seen nobody else. She did not wish it. He is so sensitive, you know.
Vita did not know what to say to this. He has communicated, though, with Alexander.
She has been too indisposed to do so.
I only mention it because he has been so very anxious about her.
Yes, no doubt. Gabriella said no more. Adelina completed her jovial polka piece and began to search the piano stool for more music. Gabriella leaned in to Vita, profiting from her sister's back being turned.
Just between us, Vita, I do not think matters are on a good footing between the lovebirds.
Vita wanted to ask more, but Adelina had already found another piece of music and was beginning to play again.
We asked you to join us, so that you could tell us what has been happening. There have been occurrences, goings-on, happenings in the house, yes?
We asked Dr. Zager, but he is so discreet. He does not talk about other patients. He only said someone in the household had been taken ill. He did not say who it was. Do you know, Vita?
Vita gave herself a moment to think by pouring more tea for the aunts and did the job slowly, carrying a cup to Adelina at the piano and carefully handing one to Gabriella, who fussily stirred 3 teaspoons of sugar into it for her nerves, as she explained. Whatever the condition of her nerves, she was not to be distracted.
Well, Vita?
It was a member of staff, she said, unwillingly.
A maid?
Not the red-haired girl who brings our hot water. I thought she looked peaky, Adelina, I told you so.
No, it was the governess.
Oh.
Gabriella appeared a little disappointed by this news.
I think I know the one.
I saw her with a little boy, the thin, pale woman, who always wears brown.
Tanta Adelina interrupted her playing to pick up her cup and saucer. From the piano, she said, she did not look healthy, I thought. Is she recovering now? Vita hesitated. Both aunts looked at her. At first their look was mildly curious, but the hesitation made both become sharpened and attentive.
I regret to say that she has died, Vita finally told them.
She did not feel it was right for her to tell them, but on the other hand, nobody else seemed to have thought to do so.
The older ladies now looked at one another and spoke in rapid German.
Was it a contagion? Why have we not been told? Was it the shellfish poisoning? In God's name, we must leave this house as rapidly as possible. Did Dr. Zecker attend her? If he did, he may have brought the contagion with him and spread it to dear Lottie.
By now, the ladies were beginning to flutter in their anxiety, their voices tremulous and rising in pitch. Vita, in an attempt to quell the upswell of nervous tension, could only spread her hands.
There is really nothing to fear. I saw Miss Hartley.
You too have been close to her?
I accompanied the doctors in their examination. They needed me to translate.
How dreadful for you.
No, I was perfectly willing.
But why? This is not the sort of thing a young lady should be involved with. Think of your own health. Think of your nerves. The strain may damage your health irreparably. I have known such cases, and that is without even considering the risk of contagion and the dreadful effects of the unhealthy air that may be surrounding you in a sick room.
No, really, I was calm throughout. It was no great strain, although, of course, it was not the easiest task.
And what did the poor lady have? What did the doctors say? Not typhus fever. Oh, do say it was not typhus fever.
Please reassure yourselves, it was not a fever that killed Miss Hartley.
What then? The oysters! I knew it! They have killed someone. Oh, my poor, poor Lottie!
Dr. Mills had been treating Miss Hartley for general ill health for some time, apparently. She had a condition and it seemed to have taken a sudden turn for the worse, but there was no reason to connect it with the seafood or anything else she had eaten.
The aunts looked a little calmer.
I do not trust this Mills, this English doctor. Excuse me, Vita. I am sure there are excellent English doctors, but in the countryside less so. This Mills looks like a farmer. He is rough in his manners and comes and goes in a cart with a plough horse. I have seen him in his muddy boots.
He is well known to the family. They have consulted him for many years, Vita said, surprised to find herself defending Dr. Mills.
Well, I suppose there is nothing better around here.
Gabriella gestured in a sweeping wave of her arm across the wide panorama on view from the grand windows.
I believe it was a self-killing,
Tanta Adelina suddenly said. He closed the lid of the piano quietly.
Why do you say that? Gabriella asked, a teacup rattling in its saucer as she held it in a trembling hand.
I heard the maids talking, Adelita told them. My English is better than people think.
I heard the two girls who came to bring my water and open the curtains chattering. They thought she had killed herself because of a broken heart.
Gabriella frowned in severe disapproval of this. She was far too old for that sort of thing.
A woman is not too old for love after she has passed the earliest blooming of her youth, Adelina replied with dignity, replacing the sheet music in the piano stool and bringing her tea over to join them.
Gabriella pursed her lips and shuddered. I consider it inappropriate even to discuss such a matter. A governess killing herself for love, indeed. Whoever heard of such a thing in a well-run household? Most unsuitable.
Then let us not discuss it further, Adelina answered.
Chapter 34. Would you say Pemberton was a place of secrets generally? Vita asked her aunt. They were in the small sitting room next to her aunt's bedroom. Louisa had set up her easel by the window and was examining the half-completed portrait of Lottie and Alexander. Why do you ask that? Louisa asked. She stepped back and peered at the painting with her head on one side. I suppose it's suspicious of me, but it now seems full of undercurrents and hidden things. I heard the housekeeper speaking very harshly to one of the nursery maids this morning. The sound came down the chimney in the yellow room. It was as clear as if they'd been in the room with me. Louisa continued her scrutiny of the painting with a look of displeasure. Has Lady Pemberton mentioned a man called Billings? Vita asked. She has. Dicky Pemberton's valet. He is very important to Dicky's health, but rather domineering in the sick room, apparently. Why? I overheard an argument between Billings and Miss Hartley. He sounded angry. She seemed to owe him money. I saw her collect a bottle from a hidden shelf in the library, and he came later for the money she left. Louisa's attention turned rapidly to her niece.
That sounds very strange, her aunt remarked. I think I also saw Miss Hartley once before, in Cambridge. I was in a pharmacy, and she came in and tried to bargain with the man behind the counter for more medicine than she could pay for.
Miss Hartley, are you certain?
Yes, it took me a while to place her, but now I am certain. I couldn't see what she was buying, but she was truly desperate to have it. Her aunt looked at Vita seriously.
What do you think it might be, this medicine?
I imagined some sort of pain-relieving mixture. My mother took laudanum for several years, as you know. It was the only medicine that gave her relief.
You think Hartley was in pain herself? One can readily become habituated to these medicines. I have known several ladies myself.
She interrupted her thought and began packing her painting and easel away.
I don't know, Vita said. I may have been the last person to speak to her last night. She told me she had suffered misery and rejection, and in her letter to Monsieur Picard.
Which letter?
The one I saw her deliver.
You know its contents?
I met the chef in the garden just now, and he showed it to me. It was full of sadness and regret. It was pitiful. When I was with the doctors, they agreed that her health had not been good for a long time. Her whole jaw was inflamed on one side and showed infections and possibly abscesses of her teeth. Aunt Louisa's hand went unconsciously to her own jaw. Oh, the poor woman, toothache. Of the worst kind, Vita said, and over a long period. The very thought of it silenced them both briefly.
I have only had bad toothache on one occasion, her aunt said. I think it is the worst pain I have ever endured. I would have taken laudanum, or anything else, frankly, to cure it. Luckily, your uncle was on hand, and he suggested whiskey, which worked very well, but poor Miss Hartley had no kind husband.
And laudanum is far cheaper than whiskey, Vita said. But she couldn't easily afford it even then. I wonder whether Billings has been profiteering from her urgent need for it. Perhaps he bought it from that dingy chemist and knew he could charge Miss Hartley any price. She has almost no possessions in her room, no jewellery, no little ornaments. I wonder whether she sold them all to buy the medicine.
Dear me, was all Louisa could say.
What a rat's nest you are conjuring up. Surely this is all rather far-fetched. He came over and sat beside her niece. You shall need to pass your thoughts on to Felicity. They may help to explain Miss Hartley's death. Felicity is tortured by all that has happened. She was certainly worried about Pemberton and the family's reputation when she spoke to me, Vita said. Her aunt looked over. You imply that she was not concerned about Miss Hartley? I'm sorry, aunt, but she did not express any interest in Miss Hartley at all, and even seemed surprised that her children might be affected by their governess's death. Oh, come, Aunt Louisa said, that is unkind. What is unkind is to allow a member of the household to be neglected to the point where she endures long periods of poor health, with no one to turn to, in my opinion, Vita replied. Vita, Felicity is one of my oldest friends. You have no right to rush to such a judgment. Perhaps you are right. It is a hasty judgment. My information is incomplete. Vita, that is a ridiculous idea. You have no need of information. Aunt, Miss Hartley has nobody to speak for her. Her death is nothing but an inconvenience to this household. Would you want me to stand by and watch as it is brushed aside? Nobody is trying to brush it aside. Come now. You are tired. You need to rest and take your mind off these difficult events. I heard someone mention an old rhyme about Pemberton, Vita said. The one that begins Rule at Pemberton? Yes, you know it? It's very well known. It's just some sort of doggerel. Carved on a medieval stone they found somewhere. I'm foolish to think about it, I suppose, Vita said, but it's been playing on my mind. Rule at Pemberton rich and well fed. Serve at Pemberton early dead. It gives me the creeps. You're tired, I imagine, dear, her aunt said. It's all been very trying.
Chapter 35. They heard an accented voice outside, asking directions of a maid. It was Dr. Zecca. Having knocked and bowed with great formality to both ladies, he addressed Vita. I should like to discuss this morning's observations. Could you bring your notes to the library? If you would permit this, of course, Frau Brocklehurst. My niece is not to be overstrained by her translating duties, Dr. Zecca. She's very young. She has already been exposed to too many distressing details. Dr. Zecca bowed humbly in consent, which Aunt Louisa, who was ready to go to battle, found rather disarming. Your niece's note-taking was exemplary, he said. I hoped only for the briefest discussion. Very well. But Vita is not to be overburdened, and I think it would be more suitable for your conversation to take place in my presence. Of course, the doctor said. My notes are in my room,
but I need a few minutes to finish copying them, Vita told him. Then I have time to call on Fräulein von Diepenthal, who was feeling stronger when last I saw her. I shall return in 30 minutes. Smiling and bowing, Dr. Zecker backed out of the room. What an odd little person he is, Louisa remarked. I never feel comfortable with men whose age is mysterious. Do you? Could be 25 or 40. Vita followed Dr. Zecker out of the room and was surprised to find him waiting on the landing outside. Why did you catch my eye when Dr. Mills asked me to hand over my notes earlier? She asked, as he fell into step beside her. Dr. Zecker smiled but did not answer. Tell me first about your interest in science, Miss Carew. Vita was irritated by this obvious diversion. I simply find scientific subjects of interest. My father is a naturalist. I enjoyed observing his methods. But you have not studied formally? No, I had a governess. She was Swiss, which is how I learnt German and French. She left after Mama became unwell. After that, my education came to an end. Did you regret this? I was greatly occupied with nursing my mother. And after Mama died, I helped my father with his parish work. There was always a lot to be done. Please accept my sincere condolences on the loss of your mother, Miss Carew. But your brother continued his studies? Yes, with some success, he won a scholarship to Trinity College. Surely you are tempted to study yourself. I try to read my brother's textbooks, but I find them very difficult to understand. I lack a fundamental grounding in the science subjects. I cannot understand even basic principles. They passed the suit of armour. Partly as a way of changing the subject, Vita stood to attention and saluted. Zecker watched, raised an eyebrow, but then joined her salute. In Germany, he said as they set off, women can graduate exactly as men. We had 2 women students among us when I studied medicine. 2, really? Indeed, yes. In my country, women can qualify as medical doctors, just as men do. That is not possible here. Zecker shrugged. We are more advanced in Germany, I think, he said with a small smile. But to the business in hand. I should like a chance to read the notes before they are handed to Dr. Mills. You fear my errors? Not in the least. I wish to add a few of my own observations, that is all. Dr. Mills may not agree with my thoughts, but I should like them recorded. Ah, here we have the staircase I must follow to my patient. We will meet again shortly, yes? The German doctor peeled off and galloped down the stairs at a surprising speed. Chapter 36. Approaching the yellow bedroom, Vita heard voices. The door was ajar. Putting her ear to the opening, she could hear enough to identify Billings and Mrs. Parks. Papers rustled. They were looking at her notes and speaking in urgent undertones. "What's it say about where they found her?" Billings asked. "She was on the floor, it says, near the door." "You said you put her in bed." "I did. I thought she was just drunk at first." "Did she smell of the drink?" "I tried to see if she was drawing breath, but I couldn't tell, not for sure. Then I thought, oh Lord in heaven, she's dead. I couldn't think straight. I just put her in bed so I could think about what to do." "All you cared about was keeping it quiet. You didn't want to disturb the beautiful music, or the engagement, or the posh dinner. You didn't care if she was dead or alive." Billings said this with a sneer. "I thought the woman was dead, Billings. There was no harm in leaving her a bit longer. Why ruin everything we spent months preparing?" "Only she wasn't dead, was she, Mrs. Parks?" "Yes, she was." "How'd she move then?" "You saying she got up out of bed after she was dead?" A brief silence fell. When she spoke again, there was a new fearful tone to the housekeeper's voice. "Will they get the police? What am I going to do?
dear God, Billings, they'll hang me.
No, they won't. You didn't kill her, you just...
I left her to die. I thought she was dead already, but she wasn't. I left that poor woman to die. God help me. I never meant to.
You just keep steady. I'll make sure you're kept out of this, Billings said. But you've got to read the next part of it. Does it say anything in there about bottles?
Bottles?
Medicine bottles.
No, it says she was on the floor. She had bad teeth. The room was almost empty. She was dead, that's all. Some words are foreign. It must be German.
German?
The girl, the one who wrote this, she's written some of the words in German.
What's she done that for? Hiding things?
You'll have to ask her that.
Is there nothing in there about medicine or blue bottles?
No, what blue bottles?
I've done her a favour a few times. I give her some of his lordship's medicine.
What? Why'd you do that?
She suffered with her teeth. It was bad.
You were making money out of her?
Not much, just a small amount for my trouble. I only give her one bottle at a time. It's dangerous. It says poison on the label.
How do you know what it says? We all know you can't read well.
I'm not stupid. It was a skull and crossbones on it. That's poison. I give her one bottle at a time. 30 drops in milk, that's the right amount. She has to give it back before I give her another. I made sure she didn't take too much, like I do with his lordship.
30 drops? That would depend on the strength of it. If you can't read, you wouldn't know the right dose, would you?
He always gives me the same. I know the man at the pharmacy. What do you know about laudanum anyway?
I've worked in big houses for 30 years. You think I've never seen opium before? I reckon it might be your doing. You told her to take too much of it. That would kill her.
Anyway, you don't need to worry about the bottle because I took it away. There was one on the nightstand and I put it in my pocket.
Where is it now, then?
I put it in the bottle room in the cellar.
Vita was trying to make sense of what she was hearing when an urgent call rang out along the hallway and the running footsteps of a housemaid were heard on the stairs. She was taking the fastest route up the stairs in the blocked-off end of the corridor.
Mr. Billings, his lordship is ringing for you.
Billings and Mrs. Parks were out of the yellow bedroom in seconds. Billings hurried towards the maid. The housekeeper hurried in the other direction and disappeared down the stairs. Neither saw Vita, who had slipped into the shadows further up the landing. In the yellow room, Vita found her notes on the table. They were disordered, but complete.
Chapter 38. Zecca drew himself up and marched out of the room, pausing only to bow to Aunt Louisa and Vita as he passed.
Well, that was quite an encounter, Aunt Louisa remarked, rinsing her paintbrush and drying it on her apron. I think I shall ring for a little sherry. I need something to restore my nerves. She pulled the embroidered cord by the fireplace. From what I understand, the doctors are in dispute over the cause of the unfortunate Miss Hartley's death.
Yes, as you heard, Dr. Mills sees no reason for the police to be involved. She died of natural causes, as he sees it.
Clearly, Dr. Zecca disagrees.
He believes she was taking opium medicine, and possibly that is what caused her death. I have just overheard something that might confirm his ideas.
And the police? I heard Mills saying they weren't needed. Felicity would certainly rather keep the police out of the matter.
Louisa stood and looked out of the window. Below, Dr. Mills, in a raincoat with caped shoulders billowing, climbed into his rough little carriage, flicked the reins, and drove away, the wheels spraying rain. Even the horse looked angry.
And Vita, what is your view of all this?
At her aunt's side, Vita could only shake her head. There are some details about Miss Hartley's death that are hard to explain. Dr. Zecca is right about that.
Which details?
The signs suggested she had died a long time before.
But surely
This is just because nobody found her. Her room was so cold and empty, Vita said. The fire had gone out. But I agree, it is odd that she had so few belongings. Felicity told me in confidence that Miss Hartley was suspected by the staff of stealing. Small items went missing and were occasionally found in her room. There was nothing there this morning. It truly was bare. Both women continued to look out at the rain, gusting across the formal gardens and Deer Park beyond. There was something pitiful about Hartley, wasn't there? Aunt Louisa said. Yes, there was. She advised me never to become a governess.
Did she say why not?
I would end up unwanted and despised.
Dear me. Just as well you have no such plans then, Vita, my dear. Now where is that sherry?
Vita pulled off her glasses and polished the lenses on a fold of her skirt. I have no particular talents and very few funds, she said. Becoming a governess is not out of the question. It may be my only choice.
Oh, come now, said her aunt. That is a very old-fashioned view, Vita. You are an intelligent young woman. Earning an independent living is not impossible these days. At something other than being a governess, I mean.
Not without some sort of training or aptitude.
You have plenty of aptitude, Vita. Look at how useful the doctors find you. They have nothing but praise. The German aunts, too, are delighted by your attentiveness to them.
Yes, I am generally helpful. This does not qualify me to make a living.
You take an interest in science, said her aunt.
A vague general interest in something does not qualify me to make a living either, though.
Oh, dear. You have taken poor Miss Hartley's words to heart, haven't you?
I shall have to ring again for that, Jerry.
But the next knock on the door brought an urgent summons, not the hoped-for sherry.
The master is took ill, miss. Lady Felicity asks you to come and speak for the German doctor.
Vita followed the maid down to the basement, along the servants' passage, and up a steep flight of stairs she had not noticed before. It took them to a dim landing, where the maid knocked on a wooden panel, which was swiftly opened from the inside by a footman. They were in Lord Pemberton's dressing room.
Chapter 37. I observed that the deceased had about her lips a very slight powdery deposit, suggesting that she had taken a medicine or drunk something which was a powder suspension. Dr. Zecker paced the room as he dictated. He paused to allow Vita to translate his words and write them. The patient was extremely underweight. This combination of observations led me to wonder whether she was not taking regular doses of a sedative medicine. Perhaps one intended to cure toothache, as she also showed clear signs, in the swelling of her jaw, of a dental infection. Do I speak too fast, Miss Carew?
No, I am keeping up, said Vita, writing.
In addition to this, I was concerned that there appeared to have been an effort to clear Miss Hartley's room of possessions. It was conspicuously empty of the usual mementos and personal belongings a woman of her age might have been expected to accumulate. There was scarcely a photograph, a painting, or even a postcard to be seen. Even in a woman of severe tastes, this seems unusual. It suggests that someone cleared her room before we were called to attend her.
Why should someone clear her room? Asked Aunt Louisa from behind her easel. She was working on the portrait again.
To conceal things, or possibly to steal them, I imagine, the doctor told her.
But what needed to be hidden? What motive could they have for hiding things?
It was the housekeeper who found her. You are suggesting that the housekeeper took things from her room? Why should she do this?
Louisa's tone was irritated.
Dr. Zecker shrugged. I cannot say. It is difficult to find an explanation.
At this moment, Swain opened the library door and showed Dr. Mills in. Without acknowledging the ladies, the English doctor said, "You are discussing the case?" "I was just saying to Miss Carew that I believe the governess's room must have been cleared of personal possessions before we arrived."
Vita translated.
"Why do you say so?" Mills demanded.
"It was so bare. Nobody has so few personal possessions."
"The staff believe she sold them," Mills said. He was slightly flushed, and now produced a large handkerchief and wiped his face. "Below stairs, they believe she had debts and was pawning or selling her valuables. Either that, or she was attempting to accumulate a fund for another purpose. Perhaps she had it in mind to travel somewhere."
The thought of the governess, as she had last seen her, doing something as cheerful as planning a journey, struck Vita as extremely unlikely, but she translated Mills's words. "I am concerned also with the advanced state of the rigor that we observed," Zecca continued. "When the police attend, I shall..."
"Why should the police attend?" Mills interrupted. "There is no need to bother them. I am her doctor, and I shall certify her death."
Vita and the German doctor looked in amazement at Mills, who was settling himself on one of the low sofas. The aunts were correct about his boots being muddy, Vita noticed.
"Now listen here. I have attended Miss Hartley for a number of years. She has not been in good health since last winter. I treated her then and have seen her several times since. She has been suffering from poor health in general, with lack of appetite and difficulty in sleeping. Her spirits have been low as a result. There was a general deterioration over several months. I expect to record congestive pulmonary weakness as the cause of death."
"But you will ask for a post-mortem examination of a more extensive and detailed kind, yes? In order that you can be certain," Zecca said.
"Not at all. As I said, I have seen this patient regularly, and I have no reason to suspect anything other than natural causes for her death."
"I find this most irregular."
"Perhaps you do things differently in Germany. But here in England, a medical man's opinion is respected when one of his patients dies. There is no need whatever to go to the officious lengths of a police surgeon's post-mortem examination."
Vita's translation skills were being strained to the utmost by this conversation.
"And what do you make of the evident signs of her having taken some medicine or draught of some kind? There were no bottles or glasses to be seen. They had been removed. Somebody, I believe, had cleared her room of these things after her death."
"I am familiar with this household, Dr. Zecca. Nobody would do such a thing, nor would anyone lie about what happened."
"She had been dead longer than a few hours, though. You must agree, so advanced a state of rigor would not have been possible if she had only died in the small hours of the night before.
It was a cold room, we both noted that. You must be well aware that the state of rigor is highly unpredictable. Different medical conditions affect it. The temperature affects it, and so on. I have no such reservations."
"And what of the swelling on her jaw? Will you do no more to investigate that?"
"What is the point of establishing whether a dead woman had toothache?" Mills said. "Ada Hartley was in poor health, and now she has died. It is a pity, but I see no advantage in pursuing the details of the matter any further. I shall sign the death certificate, and the funeral arrangements will be set in train immediately."
"And you have no concern that in not investigating whether she was suffering from poisoning, you may be missing some vital information that will help in the recovery of the other patients?"
"The other patients? There is, in fact, only one now. Miss, the German singer, her name escapes me for a moment, is making a very good recovery. There's no reason to imagine a connection between the governess and the unfortunate events at the dinner. I can see no advantage in carrying out unnecessary investigations on the unfortunate Miss Hartley."
Zecca bristled, but only said, "This is not how such matters are dealt with in Germany."
Perhaps so, but we are not in Germany now, said Mills. To Vita he then said, I will not be discussing this matter any further with Dr. Zecker. Tell him that. As far as I am concerned, his involvement in this matter is now superfluous. I would recommend that he limit himself to the care of his own patient. Make sure he understands that. Vita translated and observed the effect of this statement on Zecker. The insult had clearly hit home. But what of the cause of the food poisoning? Will you do nothing to investigate this? The German asked. Investigate? What is there to investigate? It was a bad lot of French oysters, Mills said. It's hardly even unusual. How do you know this? How does he know this? He has not taken any samples or carried out any tests? Zecker, fizzing with irritation, seemed now to be speaking to Vita. She wasn't sure whether to translate, but need not have worried, as Mills was no longer listening. He had walked to the door. There he looked over his shoulder and addressed his last remark to Vita. I should avoid the man from now on if I were you. He is misguided in his ideas and seems to want to disrupt our whole way of doing things here. Take my advice. Shake him off as soon as you can. There must be more entertaining occupations than acting as translator for aristocratic Germans and their ridiculous tame doctors. He stomped to the door and threw it open. I'll bid you good day. I have patients waiting in town. I consider this matter at an end.
Chapter 39. As Vita stepped inside, Dr. Zecker, helped by a footman, was lifting the master's unconscious body with some difficulty from the floor onto the narrow